This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Being in the moment, like you said, mindfulness, just kind of noticing the things that are happening, you know, even if you don't like them, like let them pass on by down that stream, because like it's not going to be forever. And the stuff that you do like, enjoy while it's there, and just like be present, and, you know, not keep your eye on how you think things should be looking, but how they are looking.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. And I am really excited to introduce you to our guest today, who is so aligned with our mission here. And this topic, today's show, is called Motherhood, the Full Story. And I'd like to introduce you to Elena Dillon, who is the author of Mercy House, a Library Journal Best Book of 2020, which has been optioned as a television series produced by Amy Schumer, as well as The Happiest Girl in the World, A Good Morning America Pick, and My Body is a Big Fat Temple, a forthcoming book, which we're going to talk about, which is a memoir of pregnancy and early parenting. Elena's work has appeared in publications including LitHub, River Teeth, Slice Magazine, The Rumpus, the Dr. T.J. Eckelberg Review, and Bustle. She teaches creative writing and lives on the North Shore of Boston with her husband, son, Black Lab, and tons of books. Elena, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, gosh, I have so many different, because this is real. We're talking about the real deal here. And I think the first thing I wanted to start with is just this big, simple question of what did you expect going into motherhood? And what had you had no, did you have no idea, despite knowing lots of mothers and parents and, you know, and doing lots of reading?
Well, there's been a lot of surprises, but I think probably the first was how difficult pregnancy is, at least for me. I think everybody's mm-hmm. experience is totally different. Some people love pregnancy. And for me, it was trying. It was really primal. I mean, people talk about, you know, morning sickness and being uncomfortable and things like that. But I don't think the kind of the extent to which it takes a toll on your body is really discussed that much. And, mm-hmm. Like how trying, morning sickness is. I mean, like the term itself is kind of diminishing, to say mm-hmm. like that you're all morning sickness. It like makes it part of the day. But
right,
for a lot
right.
of people, it's all the damn day mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For a very long time. And, so yeah, I think, going through the experience has made me really respect, women, the ability of women's bodies. But that it's a process that comes at a cost. It's not mm-hmm. always a magical experience, or at least, you know, not all of it is a magical experience, and that perhaps like we should, you know, pay attention and give kind of more due mm-hmm. to all that mm-hmm. that birthers go through.
And when you were looking for books to prepare you, I mean, you strike me from learning about you strike me as someone who runs deep, who goes deep, like likes to get to the issues. So you were you doing research prior, like early pregnancy, before pregnancy, or was it like now you're in it and you're like, how come, where's the information that I'm looking for?
Yeah. So for me, it wasn't an easy and like an easy decision whether I wanted to have kids. I postponed it for quite a while after I got married. I'm just kind of waiting for that feeling. Like I thought that, you know, like your clock is ticking, you're feeling like the urge to have kids. Like people talk about that, and it never was happening for me. But at some point I was like, well, you know, just biologically, you have to kind of make a decision. So because it wasn't clear to me, I turned to books, which I often mm-hmm. do, kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, like when I travel, I check out like three different books about Paris and like take notes and highlight. And so I kind of approached this decision in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I tracked down all the parenthood books, all the motherhood books that I could find. And there were a lot of kind of like nonfiction how-tos or, you know, like science oriented, but I didn't find a lot of like personal experience centered books. So like a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't find a lot of memoir or just like about the journey of becoming mothers. There were some, and I definitely appreciated those, but I wanted more because, the more I heard about it, the more I realized how varied the experiences are. So if you collected more experiences, you would increase the chances that you'd find one that you recognize. So there's that saying that, you know, you want to write the book that you want to read. So I kind of took that to heart and said, well, there seems to be kind of a gap here, which is a huge shame considering how universal the experience of pregnancy is. Like that seems like there's a big deficit there. Mm-hmm. So I took notes and I wrote this book in real time so that somebody who also was going through it in real time might kind of recognize the heat of that emotion and like the sharpness of the anxiety and, you know, the vibrancy of the joy and all those, all that would stay alive on the page.
And I remember the huge stack of books next to my wife's book stand when we were expecting, when she was pregnant, we were expecting our first. And one of the ones that always stands out, I mean, just through time, is that What to Expect When You're Expecting. What is in there and versus what isn't? You know, when you think about pregnancy, early mothering books, like what is the standard and then what's missing?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of great information about what's happening in your body. And that's really interesting because you have like this kind of, you know, scientific insight and this clinical approach that maybe, you know, if you're not knowledgeable in those fields is a nice supplement to like the real world experience. But what would be missing is kind of like that raw emotional side mm-hmm. and like the fears and the stuff that's maybe embarrassing and how those kind of clinical aspects of what's happening to your body now apply to your real life and to your real relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. And you go into that in a very real way. But before we keep going, I just thought of when you talked about, I keep thinking of in your introduction, you talk about your mom and your mom and maps. And, you know, I think that's really cool because, of course, with Parent Footprint, it's like how our parents have imprinted upon us and how we're going to imprint, hopefully, purposefully and with awareness on our own children. Like, tell us a little bit about like your mom and that footprint that she put on you with this idea of maps and a way, you know, like wanting to have a way to navigate.
Yeah, I talk about how my mom's like a very visual learner and that whenever she enters a space, she kind of reaches for like a tangible map to help her navigate. So that was true when I moved to the town that I'm currently in. Like the first thing she did when she came to visit was go to my town hall and ask an administrator there if she could have a hard copy map of Beverly, Massachusetts. And they had to, you know, kind of go through the files and pull out this antiquated papery map, and it was like the last one they had. And so, yeah, she doesn't like, you know, Google Maps, like that doesn't work for her. She likes the hard copy map and she keeps them in her car. And whenever we travel, she has those that she uses, even though we're like, we'll just walk along with the man in our phone. Yeah. So yeah, that is her way. And that's what works for her. And in a very similar, I am not oriented in that way, but what I need are other people's stories, like that people that have gone before me. That's who orient me and help me like give a heads up of what to expect. And that way, if I encounter those things, I don't feel lost because I'm like, oh, somebody has been here before. Like, here's that footprint. Like it's like following the tracks, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, then you have like a trail through the experience and you know that you're not the first one, and you're not an aberration. Like, this is normal and you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. And that's really important because all of the, there's all the tough stuff, both physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically about, having a child, carrying a child. I'll even say as a father, becoming a father. And what you hear about is all the wonderful stuff. And therefore, if you're not feeling, let's say, that connection, if you're not in bliss, if you're not so excited and there you think something's wrong with you when Absolutely. It's actually like normal a lot of the time.
Yes. And like there is this pressure not to talk about the grit. And like, and I think maybe that's lifting and changing a little bit now, but there were so many things that I went through that I had never heard about before, despite being surrounded by people that had become parents, despite going to these regular doctor's appointments. Like there's stuff that's not advertised, but then as soon as I went through it and then mentioned it to somebody, you know, like kind of, and kind of cautiously, you know, I'd be like, you know, I think I'm not sure that I'm bonded with my baby the way that I should be. Like as soon as I braved those things out loud, if there was a mother across from me who had been through the same thing, like suddenly the curtain would drop and she'd be like, me too. Like, and then all of a sudden you're reassured because it means that you're not broken and you're not the only person. And so I think that connection is so critical to feeling safe in this experience. And that's why I wanted to confront like all the most embarrassing parts of pregnancy so that I can be that person for somebody else who wanted to pick up a book and discover indignities and maybe not like the proudest moments, and know that they're not alone.
Yeah. I mean, and if people like you can say it and write it, without shame, right? Just own it. It is such a relief for people to know that, okay, you know, if she can feel this way, then it's okay for me to feel this way in other ways. Like there's not a quote right way.
Right. It's freeing for me too, because you spend so much energy, you know, projecting a false persona. It's much easier just to be truthful. And then you feel seen.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, you did all this research, you were, you know, thinking about having a child for a while. Was there like a moment that you're like, I have to write this book? Or was it just a gradual like journaling turning into a memoir?
It was gradual. I wasn't sure what it was going to become. I knew that I wanted to write it for myself to just process the feelings because, you know, I felt a lot of different ways and I wasn't exactly sure why. Like, why didn't I want kids? Like, why wasn't that like a propulsion? And was it wrong not to feel that way? And so these are like all topics that I was kind of exploring on the page to figure out why I was feeling that way and if it made sense. So I was kind of grappling the experiences. And then, you know, bit by bit, all the different things that I encountered, I was working out on the page eventually it just became this journey of going from, you know, deciding whether or not kids was in the plan for me to, you know, now my son is 2 years old and I have this memoir that encompasses that transformation.
That is in this real parenting space. And congratulations on Amy Schumer being interested in your writing and picking this up. I mean, so it just shows also a very real person who puts it all out there. Like, so what do you see in this real parenting movement, this real motherhood movement that's going on?
Yeah. It has seemed to me that the big tendency is to look at motherhood through this like romantic lens of, you know, earth goddess, or like, you know, holy Madonna. You know, when you see pregnancy photo shoots, it's like often women wearing these like goddess dresses and like wading into rivers. And that's beautiful. If that's how you feel, go for it. But it just doesn't seem like the whole story. at least not the whole story for everybody. So yeah, now I'm seeing this kind of shift where we're showing, you know, the postpartum belly, that it doesn't shrink right back up, you know, or like, the, you know, how long you bleed. There was that Frida commercial that came out around the Super Bowl that was actually banned from being played in the Super Bowl, that was, you know, kind of centered on postpartum depression and the difficulties of breastfeeding. But when I saw that, it was like a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was like a little mm-hmm. triggering because it like was so real and it brought me back to like the difficulty of those times. But like, how empowering though to project those images and to make it kind of universal, that this is something that people struggle with. And this is, you know, the kind of warriors that new mothers are, that it's not just mm-hmm. like this kind of glossy picture of a happy woman getting exactly what she's always wanted, and we love them all, you know, like we love the baby already, and like all of these kind of sentiments that you see from an airbrushed social media perspective. Like, this is like pulling, you know, back the curtain and seeing kind of the entire picture, which is, you know, could be mm-hmm. a really primal love, but then also not recognizing your body and like not knowing how to satisfy your child. Like, there's a learning curve there as you get to know one another. Mm-hmm. you know, having the baby scream at you for so long, and you just want to satisfy it and soothe it, but you've tried everything and it's not working, and you're sleep deprived and you can't even think straight, and things are crazy, and you're bleeding and you're leaking and you've got rashes and, you know, maybe mastitis infection, and like things are just nuts. It's a nutty, chaotic time. And it's beautiful because you've created something, and this person's going to have a future and change who you are as a person. And, you know, like, I think there's never a regret when you add more love to your life, but it's not all, you know, rainbows and butterflies, like some social media images would suggest.
Probably a little more than some, from what I've seen. And why do you think our culture does this? Like, what, I mean, not what you're doing, does what we usually do, which is make everything look like so nice, so project this positive. Because this was going on before social media.
Right.
This image.
It sure was. I think there's a few reasons. I think one is that in general, a lot of women's issues have not been considered, you know, for polite conversation. You know, like even just like discussions of periods for all time have been, you know, like you call it Aunt Flo, or like you know, you're afraid that you don't want to send your husband to buy tampons. Like these are things that are not considered for general consumption. Like, this is like conversations that are in hushed tones. Materials that are directed towards women, like rom-coms and women's fiction, like it's categorized separately so that men don't have to accidentally trip over it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, motherhood and pregnancy is like the epitome of femaleness. It's like the thing that we can do. So what we go through and the struggles that we go through just are not, you know, considered appealing and, you know, for everybody. It's not like, mm-hmm. it's not to be discussed for everybody. In addition, when I was pregnant and like asking my doctor why there were so many things that I wasn't told about, I often heard like, well, if we told you this, you wouldn't have kids, which I found to be such an infuriating response. Mm-hmm. And then it's so demeaning that like you couldn't have had all the information, because then you wouldn't have come to the right decision. And we wanted to, you know, censor
it. We want to trick you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, I couldn't handle the truth. And it's so silly because women have multiple kids. So like they go through it and they decide to have it again. So it just doesn't make sense. But I think, there's this kind of pressure to preserve the image of mother, either so we don't scare other women or so we don't scare men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in terms of preserving, I'm going to move to preserving mental health. So something that was really cool. I just read your piece about the parts of our pandemic lives worth preserving, where your piece on running. And that really spoke to me as someone who, I tell people, so I'm a regular runner, and I tell people, like, I run for, I don't run for physical health. I run for mental health. I mean, of course, you get the physical health in there. But so tell everyone what you did, what you went from to what you did, because it's quite astonishing.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm alone in this experience. I think a lot of people in the pandemic have done similar things. But before the pandemic, I always tried to exercise, but it was always kind of like this like lazy gesture toward it. You know, I'd like play a Zumba video and then like kind of like shuffle along and like said that I exercised. And then during lockdown, one day I was just like, I'm going to go for a run. I think because like we had started going for on multiple walks a day, I think like a lot of people, because you should get that change of scenery, you know, like there was mm-hmm. nowhere to go. We wanted to get out of the house. And so like we would extend our house by like walking outside and making our neighborhood like, you know, an extra route around the hallway. So we were doing multiple runs a day. And then there was the idea, or multiple walks a day. And then there was the fact that we had no childcare. So any time that I wasn't working, I was taking care of my son. And so there was just no time for me outside of my writings. There was no time for just my own mental health or, you know, serving my own interests. And running became kind of protected time that was justifiable for me to take outside of watching my son. And these are pressures that I put on myself. It's not like my husband saying you're not allowed to do other things outside or mm-hmm. this is, you know, I think it's like something that's just ingrained in a lot of mothers, is I need to justify why I'm not with my son, and work is a good reason because there's income. So you just have to like find other good reasons. Mm-hmm. And running is, you know, it's healthy.
Right.
So that was protected time that I could just have for me and my audiobook. So every day maybe it started, you know, as like, okay, I'll just do like a mile. Yeah, I could probably just do a mile, even though I'm not a runner. And if I don't finish the mile, like it's more than I would have run otherwise. And so like, I just set very low expectations for myself. And it was just, it was nice to just, you know, get some fresh air, channel some of that nervous energy that we were all having during the pandemic, seeing mm-hmm. other people in safe ways, you know, watching how other people are coping and like keeping an eye on the neighborhood and like feeling these kind of distant connections by seeing, you know, people in the gardening in their backyards or, you know, playing with their dogs. And just day by day, I kept doing it. And it's now been, you know, a year and 4 months or so, 3 months. And I haven't missed a day. And now it feels like a compulsion in a way, because I'm worried mm-hmm. that if I skip a day, then tomorrow I'll be like, well, I could just skip one more day and like the whole thing will unravel. I've never gone from being an exerciser to being a non-exerciser, or, you know, to having a like day by day and then going back to exercising. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to keep the streak going.
Nice. And it's so needed. I mean, even in a non-pandemic life, which we're starting to experience again, depending where we are in the country, but things are opening up. So it's nice to get out again. Motherhood, self-care, right? Like, how much is out there about that, right? Like, what's been your learning curve on what you need to be a healthy you and be a present you for your child?
Yeah, I, you know, comparing it to what my husband needs and making sure that we're all finding our own ways to care for ourselves. So yeah, that has been an experience. So I'm more of an extrovert. So I kind of thrive when I'm out in social situations or I get at least some time of that, which I'm grateful is now returning a bit. So that was difficult during the pandemic. But my husband is not. So he's an introvert. So he has found his self-care. Every morning he wakes up at 5:30 and does 45 minutes of yoga before the rest of the house gets up. And he just likes mm-hmm. having that quiet house where no one else is awake. It's just him. And he, you know, is doing a lot of breathing and stretching. And that is how he feels renewed for the day. That would not work for me. I would find that too boring. So running worked for me. And then there's the social aspect where like he does not need that at all. And in fact, that just adds more stress to his life. Like he kind of found that aspect of the pandemic to be refreshing in that he didn't have to, you know, meet the needs of other people by going out. He had an excuse. So I am somebody who needs that. And I feel this like guilt and probably self-imposed shame a little bit when I'm the one who goes out after, you know, before I put Rowan to bed or after Rowan goes to bed to meet some friends. That feels like kind of an indulgent move for a mother. And again, it's self-imposed, it's culturally imposed. It seems like we accept, you know, if a father goes out, you know, after work for the day, he needs to unwind, he worked hard, you know. But if a mother goes out, there's like kind of this illicit vibe about it. And I'm trying to overcome that
guilt.
Yes. And it's me, and it's something that I'm working on, but of course it's, you know, imposed by our society too. I mean, like there's a franchise called Bad Moms about moms who go out and drink. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So like you couldn't have a franchise about bad dads. It would be like, they'd have to be committing crimes or something. Like it'd be like, so there's a need for moms to care for themselves, but also there's this extra hurdle of not being judged. Like I know that I've heard other people talk about moms who, you know, go on, you know, weekend getaways with some friends and they're like, oh, that poor, but the dad is babysitting, or, you know, like single parenting and like that, you know, of course that term babysitting for dads is like so silly. But yeah,
poor guy. He's got to take care of his kids. Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah. So it's important to find whatever works for your family and to make sure that everybody's needs are being met. And it's a tough balance. Especially if you feel like, you know, things are working against you.
You bring up judgment from others, which is true, like societal judgment. And that could be, I mean, you know, often it's other moms or older generation moms, you know, like, what are you doing? You know, like, how's, you know, are you being selfish? You focusing on yourself? But then you also talked about, I think it's important to differentiate your own internalized judgment. And I think it is important for people to look at that and take it apart to be like, okay, what's coming from the society, what's coming from extended family and friends, and then what's coming from me, and trying to start to chisel away at the, like, how can I think about this differently, regardless of what other people think? Like, how can I give myself permission? How can I know that I'm a good mom and I need to be healthy? I need to take care of myself.
Yeah. And like, for me, that has been, you know, if I'm going out to meet friends at night, it's been, and I feel guilty about it. I just ask my husband, you know, like, is this working for us? Like, is this okay? And like, and it's hearing somebody else be like, yes, like, I don't want to go, you know, like you should be the one to go, or like, I went last time, or, you know, like having that dialogue and give, having somebody else, I shouldn't need the permission, but like having somebody mm-hmm. else tell me that it's okay. And like, I need it. You know, and I'll return a better mother for it, you know, mm-hmm. that makes me feel better than walking out the door.
So, talking about partners, husbands, and I'm going to use them either for partners or husbands. So the person who's not, carrying the baby, primary caretaker of the baby, it's different. Right? It's different. I remember, again, look back, it's like I wasn't able to connect with my children the same way my wife was when she was pregnant. I wasn't connected that way, right? It was more of an intellectual exercise. And as a husband or another partner who has not had that experience and is not carrying, like, what advice can you give to our listeners about how to convey things, you know, from what you went through, how to convey things like to your husband, like what you're experiencing in a way that, you know, is real. And it's, you know, the communication, it may be not easy at times, but it's real and it's open. So partners know how to support.
Yeah. So, That's really interesting. The way you phrased it too, about like, you know, how, you know, the partner who is not carrying the baby is not connected to the baby. I actually, when I was pregnant, never felt that connection myself, which I didn't expect. I thought the love would come immediately and I would feel this equilibrium and this connection with the baby in my body. And I kept waiting for it and it never came. And that was kind of terrifying. And it also didn't come after the birth for much longer than I would have liked. Like people, you know, talk about how they're like giving birth is the happiest day of their life. And they feel this instant flood of love. And for me, that didn't happen. It was something that like a love that built gradually, over a period of months. And so I kind of thought of myself as like, that's the stereotypical dad, like quote unquote, like that feels apart from the whole experience and is not, you know, like reaping the benefits, of that, you know, hormone, flood. So my advice, I suppose, to fathers would be, or to partners would be based on my own experience living it as a mother, which is, I guess, to realize that the mother or the birther is experiencing some forms of loss as well. Like if she is struggling through pregnancy, it's because she has lost the person that she was before pregnancy. And that pregnancy, at least for me, was almost like having a chronic illness. And so like I have also a renewed respect for chronic illness sufferers, because it's not something that you can escape. You're almost trapped inside this condition and your body is growing like faster than your confidence and comfort can keep up with. It almost looks different by the end of the day than it did at the beginning of the day, and not always in attractive ways. And you feel different and there's pain, and there's, you know, bowel discomfort and there's all sorts of different things. And so even if she is feeling, you know, connected to the baby and the benefits of that love, there has, like, she's sacrificing for it. So it's kind of this give and take. Then as far as after the baby is born, if you're still not feeling connected, my husband was actually really comforting to me when I expressed this fear that I didn't think that I loved the baby. And there was actually a time when, you know, like even weeks in when I said, I feel like I love you, my husband, more than I love this baby. And I think that is terrible and like that is not acceptable. And he was really comforting to me and said, well, you've known me much longer. So, you know, like we have a 10-year history and you only know this person for 2 weeks. And like already, yeah. look how much we've learned about him already in these 2 weeks and how much more attached to him you are now than when he was born. And like, so that's just going to be exponential from here on out. So if you just give it time, like that connection is going to build and you're going to like create a rapport, you know, like you're going to have a relationship together. You don't know who you are either as a mother yet. So you're getting to know that person as well. So it's just this kind of like settling in period where like these connections are forging. And you'll eventually feel like this strong family, but it feels tenuous at first. So that's,
I'm hearing from you like so much. It's like permission to be authentic and just to put expectations aside, because often in several aspects of our life, it's the expectations that actually cause, you know, it's very Buddhist, of course, mindful. Like every time we attach to something or expect something to be different than it's not, we experience internal distress and pain. And to be able to go with it, be open about whatever it is you're feeling.
I think that would be great advice to any new parent, is to have no expectations, because every day is a different day too. Like even like when you think that you've like kind of, you know, learned how your baby likes to sleep or how your baby likes to eat, it could change the next day. So it's just like, you're just kind of day by day. And like, it was the pressures of my previous life that I was putting on this new life that I think caused me a lot of stress. Like, Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be sleeping mm-hmm. right now, you know, or like, mm-hmm. like I should be, you know, back into shape already. But it's just, right. just kind of like being in the moment, like you said, mindfulness, like just kind of noticing the things that are happening, you know, even if you don't like them, like let them pass on by down that stream, because like, it's not mm-hmm. going to be forever. And the stuff that you do like, enjoy while it's there, and just like be present and, you know, not, mm-hmm. not keep your eye on how you think things should be looking, but how they are.
Right.
Looking.
Yes. Awesome. You can't bring a, as you mentioned, you can't bring a human into this world and your body act and look the exact same way the whole way through and after. And with loss, right? There's changes that occur. And you also talk, I mean, you talk about, it's so important, the body acceptance, and then also converse, you know, what we experience, particularly women experience, is body shaming. You know, how do you look at it? How did you look at it before you had this experience, and now?
Yeah, pregnancy is a really odd time, because your body is on display, and for the first time, people feel like they can comment on it right in front of you very comfortably. You know, like they can say like, oh, you're ready to pop, or like you're all belly, or they can guess like what gender you might be having based on how your body looks. And then there's this pressure afterwards to return, to get your body back, you know, like that's a phrase, get your body back. And like you said, there's no, it's impossible to get your body back. You can never be the same as you were before such an experience, before such a transformation. And like, should you want to be like, you know, like there's, you know, there should be this emphasis on celebrating what your body has accomplished. Like, what a miracle. Like, you formed a human, and then it mm-hmm. exited your body, mm-hmm. and then you nourished that human from your own body for potentially months. Like, you kept a baby alive, potentially, like, if you're not using formula, on the only thing that, like, only what you, you know, created. And it's miraculous. And you're not going to get rid of those stretch marks, and you're not going to get rid of, you know, some pelvic floor changes. Your feet may never get smaller. Like, your breasts will hang differently, but like, of course they will. And so I think like to pressure a woman, to get her body back and drop that weight and look the same as she did is kind of a dismissal of everything that she's accomplished, whereas we should like brandish these changes like battle scars, you know, that are like also, you know, some kind of personal victory.
Yeah. And that, again, separating other expectations for get your body back versus one's own expectations. I mean, do you find that, I mean, there's self-talk that has to happen here to be like, no, this is me now, and this is fine. And I'm, you know, I'm this awesome, beautiful, childbearing woman. Like, what kind of process does you think people, you know, have to go through?
Oh, absolutely. Most of it is probably self-pressure. Because nobody says to you, you need to get your body back. You know, like they can talk about your body while you're pregnant and like how much weight you get, you know, gained, but then as soon as the baby's out, they no longer talk about your body, at least to your face. But just because, like, you know, I've been in circumstances though where like you visit, you see a new mother, and then you leave, and people discuss it, you know, behind their back. So like, it's easy to just like intuit than what people are saying about you, perhaps. But yes, I think if you can just, you know, learn to love the way that you look, and to like look down at your body and see your children, you know, like, I think that kind of puts a new lens on it. It's not your body anymore. It's not just your body, you know, it was kind of this launching pad for these other lives.
Yes. And a lot of kids that I know really still like to be very close to that body
yes, <that's true. laughs>
that they came from. So how would you say, how has motherhood changed you?
I think it has expanded the breadth of my experiences. So there has been much more joy, and then also much more frustration and sorrow, but especially during this pandemic, I found it a particular blessing because, you know, we were in lockdown, so we had only like the inside of our house to entertain us. We were experiencing a lot of anxiety and panic about that, but it was so nice to have Rowan, who didn't know anything about a pandemic and was satisfied in that own space and like discovering, you know, different worlds inside that house, you know, opening cabinets and all like the possibilities of Tupperware and like just like bringing joy to things that had seemed dull to us and like opening up the mundane and making it, you know, kind of this spectacle. So I guess I'm seeing the world in a new way. And he's made us silly, you know, I have a renewed sense of silliness, which is fun. You know, we do a lot more singing, a lot more dancing. So in that way, it makes like these small moments into big moments. On the other hand, like it makes other things that were easy a little bit more difficult. We have to live at a slower pace. I find vacationing very difficult. You know, like we can't see the amount of things that we like had once seen and at that same pace. Nothing is predictable. You know, like we can't rely on a good day. Mm-hmm. Like if we pack up and go to the beach, we don't know what mood he's going to be in. And so back to that mindfulness, it's about just like living in the moment and saying, okay, this one didn't work. But you know, we'll try again tomorrow. And just when there is a good day, just like really reveling in it.
It has expanded your experience is what I'm hearing. And, in all ways. And I think again, the real story is to help parents out there understand the experience of having children expands you in all ways, the joy, the adventure, and the depths of frustration and difficulty and feeling out of control and things not working the way they're quote supposed to work. Like it's all of it. I think Zorba the Greek, the full catastrophe, right? It's like, it's all of it is absolutely in parenting and motherhood.
Yeah. Like I see myself as, you know, the most fun I've ever been, as well as like the angriest. So you just like, you get to know different versions of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And yes, and orienting everyone back, as you said, to like each moment, each day, it's always changing and it's always going to be different, and trying to have that clean slate in each moment and each day. It's really challenging, but it's an aspirational goal.
Yes. And not to put the pressure on yourself or your children to mm-hmm. make each day something that you hope it will be, but just let it mm-hmm. be what it is.
Okay, before we get to the parent footprint moment question, that's your preparation there. What do you want everyone, like what are your hopes that people will take from your new memoir coming out this fall, shortly?
Yes. There's a few things I hope. So I point out a lot of ways in which we don't celebrate women, and that we hold women to standards that maybe we shouldn't. And so I hope that there's like a spread awareness about that. But in general, though, I hope that it empowers women to share their own stories, because I think that we need to collect as many as possible, that like we haven't really valued the mother's story as well as we should. And so we've kept them kind of quiet. And because of that, we don't know when our experiences are normal or not. One of the biggest examples of this is like the spectrum of baby blues to postpartum depression. I think it's like mm-hmm. really unclear what postpartum depression looks like in the real world versus like when we see images of, you know, a woman wanting to drive her truck off a bridge. Like that is kind of like mm-hmm. the most extreme mm-hmm. version of it. And that's the one that we've seen the most. So if it doesn't look that horrible, we don't think that's what we have. So I think the more real life stories that we put out there about what our experiences looked like, the more chance that other people can point to it and say, oh, that's what I have. And be able to then either, you know, find treatment or find community, or, you know, find allies, and just, you know, find whatever you need because the information is out there. Whereas now I think there is like kind of this hush to keep our stories to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's time. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as a person, as a parent, or as a parent, and that new awareness had a positive impact on yourself, your child, and or those you love.
Okay. So the instance, I'm sure there are many, the instance that I'm going to talk about is has to do with breastfeeding. So there is, you know, that well-known phrase, breast is best. And just like the general best practice is to breastfeed up to 1 year. Breastfeeding was really difficult for me. I had a full supply of milk, but I had a lot of trouble latching and we had to use all sorts of different devices. And it was hard for me to do alone. It was hard for me to do in public. So I wanted to give my baby the best that I could. And I tried for a really long time. And I think doing so and feeling that pressure actually made mm-hmm. me more of an unhappy mother because it was such a struggle and it was so isolating and painful and frustrating for me and the baby. So I breastfed for 5 months and that was pushing it considering mm-hmm. like what a toll it took. So I think I realized at that point that best practice does not necessarily equate to what's best for our family. And so to like really look at the information that's provided and why things are considered best practice, like what kind of a difference it makes. So like Emily Oster is a, I'm sure you're familiar with her, is a big, advocate of this, is like, you know, looking at information and kind of discerning what different choices means and like the consequences that they have. So her book Expecting Better and Crib Sheet and she's coming out Family Firm, like that these are all like my Bibles and I turned to them. And so like I, you know, read from her that the difference between breastfeeding and formula actually only equated to about like one extra bout of diarrhea a year for a kid. So you have
all that for nothing.
So you have these, yes. Like when you take the phrase breast is best, you put like so much significance mm-hmm. onto it. But when like it really comes down to this brass tacks, then you can kind of have a more knowledgeable decision of like, well, is that really worth, you know, like the consequences. So I've been trying to apply that to all aspects of my parenting. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of talked about different circumstances where that might come into play, you know, like when I want to go running or when I want to go out to meet friends and, you know, like what is best for the family rather than what like the general public might consider best yes. practices.
That is super important, everyone. You heard that. What is best practices is not necessarily best practices for you or your family, right? And again, like there's this theme here that you're talking about, we're like pushing through societal expectations, right? Expectations is like capitalized, bolded, and really looking within to look at your situation, who you are, what you care about, what's important to you, and to trust that inner guide over the societal pressures
yes.
and expectations.
And to give you and the members of your family the tools that they need to be happy and to act best inside that unit.
Awesome. Thank you, Elena, for sharing all of this with us today. Tell everyone, so My Body is a Big Fat Temple coming out soon, and you have your other books. Tell everyone what they should be looking for and where to get them.
Sure, yes. My Body is a Big Fat Temple comes out on October 12th, which happens to be my 35th birthday.
Awesome.
So yes, give me a birthday gift by pre-ordering mm-hmm. it now. So you could do that anywhere books are sold, whatever's most convenient to you. I have my debut novel, Mercy House, came out last year, and that's also available wherever books are sold. And The Happiest Girl in the World came out this April. And it ended at this Olympics. So it feels like very timely. And like, if you read it, you're kind of living it in real time.
You have been doing a lot of writing.
The pandemic was a very disruptive time.
Well, thanks so much for this conversation. And I'm sure you're going to be enlightening us in the future about motherhood and parenthood as you experience it in real time. So thank you for your honesty and authenticity.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everyone, that concludes another episode. If you liked what you hear, please pass on to your friends, subscribe to the show, join our amazing community. And if you want more of Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan, check out our bonus episodes once a month exclusively on Stitcher Premium. To listen, just go to stitcherpremium.com/Dr. Dan, click Start Free Trial, select a monthly plan, and sign up with the code Dr. Dan, and you'll get a month of free listening. Help us in our passionate mission to make the world a more loving, compassionate, and accepting place, one person, one parent, and one child at a time. You know what I'm going to ask you to do, and that is to try to be the person you want your child to become. And as always, ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. If you are an advertiser interested in advertising on our show, go to midroll.com/ads. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com. Listen, subscribe, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.